ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Alan Kohler, and I want to take you straight to the source. Every Friday, I sit down with the people running companies, shaping industries, and influencing the Australian economy to talk risk, power, profit, pressure, not just their success, but their strategy and what it means for the rest of us. Because that's business. Search, subscribe, and stay ahead. Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcast.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. G'day, Matt Bevan here. This is If You're Listening. Last week on our episode about oil and gas exports from the Persian Gulf, you might remember there was a bit about an attack on an American warship. The USS Stark was hit by Iraqi missiles in the Persian Gulf, which was a surprise to Washington and the people on the ship, because it was their understanding that they were actually meant to be on Iraq's side. The attack killed 37 American sailors, and it was the only time a US Navy ship has been hit by missiles since World War II. It was a tragic event, and this story that I'm going to tell today isn't meant to downplay that. But as the years have gone by, information has come out that makes this incident seem more and more bizarre. Because the Iraqi plane that fired these missiles wasn't at all what you would expect. I've got our producer, Pat Sunderland, here, who does not know this story and has to pretend to be interested even if he isn't. G'day, Pat.
G'day, Matt. I'm very excited you're getting into this because I have, true to my word, I've not looked into any of the research you've done.
Yeah.
But I've got to say that during the episode when I was, you know, putting stuff together for this, I was very curious as to how that happens, how you accidentally bomb your ally.
How you accidentally bomb your ally and how a US naval ship is so vulnerable to totally being hit out of the blue and it didn't react at all. As far as the ship was concerned, it was like, nothing's happening, I'm on fire. It was a total surprise to everybody on the ship. And it's a bizarre story. It's really strange. So I need to situate you, to start with, in this stage of the Iran-Iraq war. We're in 1987. And to do this, I need you, Pat, to pull up a map of the Persian Gulf, just so that you can describe what you're seeing so that the listeners don't have to pull over their car right now and pull out a map of their own.
I am looking at a map of the Persian Gulf. It looks, look, I've got to tell you, it looks very nice. You've got Kuwait, you've got Iraq, you've got Qatar, the United Arab Emirates. You know, it reminds me of the watering hole where all the animals gather in the savannah to all chill out together.
Yes, that's right. Coming out of the undergrowth now, the wild Bahrain. Yeah. The thing that you can see about the Persian Gulf is that it's kind of like a backwards L to a certain extent, you know, with the top of the L being right up in Iraq and Iran and the tip of the L being the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes.
So most of Iraq and Iran's oil fields are right up there at the top of the Persian Gulf, where the Persian Gulf ends. And the Iraqi and Iranian oil drilling and processing places are actually really, really close to each other. And so one of the first things that happened in the Iran-Iraq war is that they bombed each other's facilities, and they were trying to claim the other side's oil fields. By 1987, both countries are trying to find other ways of exporting their oil because they need the money from the oil exports in order to, you know, fund their war efforts. And so the Iranians, what they've done is they've built pipes that bring the oil all the way down to this little island called Siri Island.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's just sort of smack bang in the middle there, yeah.
Yeah. So that's an Iranian island, and they built basically a facility there which would allow them to load oil onto ships, which would then just be sent out through the Strait of Hormuz to be sold in other parts of the world. But the point was that that island of Siri is obviously very far from Iraq.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's out of range of most Iraqi fighter jets even.
Mm.
So Iraq was desperately trying to figure out a way to bomb this island of Siri.
Mm.
But they didn't have any planes that could get there. Even if they did have planes that could get there, they didn't have any clear pictures aerial photos of the facility, so they couldn't sort of plan an attack on it.
Sure.
They also couldn't get any satellite pictures from the Americans because the Americans kind of didn't want to get involved. The Americans wanted the oil to be going out there.
For reasons which we now understand.
For the reasons that we are now living through, exactly. Yeah. And they couldn't get close enough to take pictures of their own. And so the Iraqi government owned a number of French-made Falcon 50 private jets. Now, these are small private jets, like a business jet that you would imagine a multi-millionaire to be flying around on when they're going to Davos.
Right.
The Iraqi government used them to fly officials around, including the president, Saddam Hussein. So what happened was the Iraqi intelligence service gave one of these private jets, which was apparently codenamed Susanna, after a French girlfriend of one of the Iraqis.
The most French thing I've ever heard of, but yeah.
Yeah. So they gave this plane to the Iraqi Air Force to use basically as a makeshift spy plane.
The advantage being that such a small plane that's clearly for personal use is not going to be seen as a military.
Exactly, yeah. And so they set up basically a fake business trip for some wealthy Iraqi businessman and said they're going to fly from Jordan, the capital of Jordan, Amman, to Mumbai in India, which happened to require a flight route that took them basically over the top of Siri Island.
Right.
They used that little diversion to take a bunch of photos of the oil facilities in Siri Island. This worked great. So the Iraqi Air Force decided to double down on this plan. Basically, they were like, well, we've got these business jets that the Iranians don't shoot at. What if we can use these for other things?
What could go wrong with setting up a situation where you're constantly using civilian pretense to cover your military?
I can't imagine a problem with this. Why wouldn't you do this?
Put a red cross on the side. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. So they've got Susanna, which is their plane, and they send Susanna back to its factory in France and asked for some modifications to be made to the plane.
Yeah.
Now, the French had been supplying Iraq with their brand of Mirage fighter jet. The same company had made the business jet and also makes these fighter jets.
Right.
So what they said was, we need to be able to train our pilots in how to fly and use the Mirage fighter jet. But every time we take off in a Mirage fighter jet, they're in danger of being shot out of the sky. So what we want is for you to put some bits of the Mirage fighter jet onto Susanna so that our Mirage pilots can practice without the risk of being shot down.
I see. So you load up the civilian plane with the military equipment so that you can get test flights without being targeted.
That's right. That was what the plan was. So the Mirage fighter jet was able to fire what's called Exocet missiles. And the way that it aimed was with something that the French called a Cyrano nose cone assembly.
I'm sorry, this is beyond parody. That's named after Cyrano de Bergerac?
Yes. And it's because it was this weird pointy nose cone that was on the front of the Mirage fighter jets.
Yeah.
And so they were like, oh, it looks like a funny nose. We will call it the Cyrano.
I'm just picturing like Cyrano de Bergerac crouched behind a bush, coaching guy, being like, no, you see, you should strike her with a missile.
Yes, exactly. That's right. So we're just starting to get into the ridiculousness of this story, Pat. We're starting to veer off course from logic and intelligence gathering and reconnaissance flights to ridiculousness. So what they did was the French company agreed to mount missiles on the bottom of Susanna and put a Cyrano nose cone on the front. So I'm going to send you a picture now that is of Susanna after the modifications.
Okay, so I guess first off, my apologies to the French. Yep. I see why they call it a Cyrano nose cone. That is very prominent.
But, I mean, to me, what it looks like is, you know those joke disguise faces with the big nose and the glasses?
Yeah. This is a Groucho Marx plane.
This is basically a Groucho Marx plane. It's got a fake nose that is like in no way matches the rest of the plane.
The body of the plane looks very much like a commercial, you know, a white and rounded and very sort of sleek.
Yep.
And then it's just got a massive pointy black spike sticking out the front of the face.
And it looks like, I'm not a fatter jet.
My name is Suzanne. I don't know what you mean.
My name is Susanna. What are you talking about? Now, the strangest part of it, though, was the cockpit. So airplane cockpits are generally designed as like a mirror image.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the same controls for the pilot and the co-pilot. So what they basically did was they ripped out the co-pilot's controls. Now you've only got half of Susanna's cockpit controls are there. And they go and they get all the Mirage controls from the Mirage fighter jet and kind of just like build the other half of the cockpit is now like a Mirage fighter jet cockpit. So it's like Two-Face.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it was the best that they could come up with. And as far as they knew, they were just, you know, setting up a system.
True. This was just for practice runs. This was just to show you where all the buttons are. This is one step above a flight simulator.
Yeah, yeah. And presumably flight simulators in Iraq weren't particularly high quality in the 80s. So this was, you know, pretty good. So Susanna now is like in disguise. It's got, you know, plush seats in the back and a radar nose cone and missiles on the bottom and a horrifying mess in the cockpit. So the thing is that obviously Iranian military installations, the navies of all of the various militaries patrolling the Gulf are obviously on high alert for fighter jets.
Yeah.
But they are not on alert for business jets in disguise at all.
Sure.
And so Susanna basically now had a free choice of targets.
Mm.
Nobody was going to defend against Susanna because they would not expect that Susanna was going to, you know, bomb them. So they did a few training runs and then the crew of Susanna was sent on her first combat mission with the coded message, apparently, let the bird fly.
Oh, no, that's not good.
So they take off. They've got one pilot who is like a private plane pilot sitting in the private plane cockpit. And then over on the other side, they've got a fighter pilot sitting with like these weird sort of rigged up.
They're making announcements like, we're going to be launching a missile soon. Yes. So tighten your seatbelt sign has been lit up and please
stop smoking. Now the target that she ended up hitting was the USS Stark, which was an American naval frigate. The Iraqis claimed that this was a mistake and they said they thought it was an oil tanker.
Sure.
Now, the USS Stark does look like an oil tanker in that they are technically both ships.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like saying, sorry, I blew up your tank. I thought it was a tractor or I thought it was a petrol truck.
That's why the size difference alone has to be enormous, right? Like,
yeah. It wasn't even like an aircraft carrier that is like presumably looks similar to an oil tanker on a radar. It would be big. Yeah. Whereas this was quite a small frigate, you know, with a couple of hundred naval officers on board.
Yeah.
The Americans and the Iraqis initially said that they thought that it was a Mirage fighter jet that had fired the missile, but that doesn't actually make any sense, considering that the USS Stark didn't actually do anything to prepare for being under attack, which it would have done.
Exactly. If it sees a fighter jet coming, they're going to, you know, all hands on deck.
Yeah, exactly. The Stark had defensive capabilities, including guns that can fire at incoming missiles and jets, didn't even try to use them. So Susanna booked it back to Iraq.
Yeah.
The Americans asked the Saudi Air Force to chase after Susanna, but they went, no, thanks. We're not interested in getting involved.
Gosh, right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So the Americans ended up accepting Saddam's apology and excuse that it was a mistake and started sharing more intelligence with Iraq in the hopes that this wouldn't happen again.
Yeah. It just seems so bizarre to me, like that key question of why did you launch the missile? Like that excuse of we thought it was an oil tanker. All their military operations till now would have been monitoring oil tankers. They know what one looks like. They know how one operationally moves, and they know when they can expect to see one. It's so bizarre.
And the other thing is that it was launched from 13 kilometers away. Now, if you have ever been down to the coast, you can see large coal-carrying ships more than 13 kilometres away, and there is absolutely no way that you are going to mistake those. Just the silhouette is different.
Yeah, if we understand that this plane's entire purpose was the fact that you can't mistake the silhouette of one plane for a military plane, why does that principle not apply to a ship that's clearly not an oil tanker?
Yes, yeah, that's a very good point, basically, yes. But, you know, what the Iraqis got out of this was absolutely no ramifications and more intelligence from the United States.
What an incredible deal-maker Hussein was. That's incredible.
Now, one might argue that this may be exactly what the Iraqis wanted all along.
I mean, can it be that simple that it's just, well, hey, if you didn't want us to bomb your ships, tell us where they are next time. Like, can that really work on this high geopolitical scale?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that being said, I've been reading as much about this as I can because for years and years and years after this, we didn't know that it was Susanna that did this.
Yeah.
The official story from both the Americans and the Iraqis was that it was a fighter jet.
Mm.
It was only much, much later that it emerged what had actually been involved in this.
Yeah.
But there are some sort of insider reports from, you know, interviews with the pilots,
sure,
the Iraqi pilots, and they go, no, I thought it was a ship that was going into a prohibited zone. I saw it from a long distance and I fired at it. And, I mean, I who knows? But still, it couldn't possibly have gone better for the Iraqis. As we said in our episode, though, it meant that the US Navy was put on ultra high alert for any unexpected aircraft, which, of course, tragically led to the shooting down of an Iranian passenger jet.
Mm.
At one point, actually, the US Air Force was so paranoid about enemy aircraft in the area that they sent a pair of F-14 Tomcats to intercept what they thought was a fighter jet flying at supersonic speed. They went up. Thankfully, they checked what it was because it was a Concorde.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the F-14 Tomcats chased a Concorde across the sky and went, oh, hang on, that's a Concorde. Let's leave that alone.
Well, you know, it's something that we do see happen every now and then in these geopolitical conflicts. I mean, that you can point to a bunch of examples over the last, you know, 20 years of flights being shot down accidentally out
exactly.
of whether it's a, you know, an overabundance of caution or a paranoia or just a mistake that's then hastily covered up.
Yeah, there's heaps of examples of it. It's really bad. Don't, you know, do this. Don't do the Susanna thing. It's a really bad idea.
I mean, it's just incredible that you could just draw so much of this back to this bizarre one-of-a-kind plane that is literally half passenger aircraft, half military aircraft. Like,
we're not done, by the way.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
So the Iraqis never used Susanna again for a combat mission.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years, there were no public photos of Susanna. There was nothing known about what had happened to Susanna. But in 2024, there was a photograph of Susanna, which we can confirm based on the tail number and the various other things. And I'm going to send you this picture of Susanna from 2024, and I want you to tell me if there's anything surprising about it.
Okay, so number one, they have taken off the giant nose.
Yes, the nose is gone. Yep, it has no vestiges of its previous thing.
Okay, sorry, I see what I have.
You see what I'm trying to.
Sorry, I was missing the forest for the trees. There, I see.
Yes, yes, you're inspecting the nose cone when you should have just been looking at the flag and the writing on the side.
The big block letters on the side that says Islamic Republic of Iran Air Force.
Yes. And the Iranian flag on the tail.
You traitorous! What happened? What?
Yes, this is the plane that was piloted by Iraq to shoot an American ship, the only missile attack on an American warship since World War II, and now it is painted as being part of the Iranian Air Force.
What does that mean?
So, after the Iran-Iraq War, which ended in 1988, only a couple of years went by before the Gulf War began.
Mm.
The Americans and various other countries went to war with Iraq in the early 90s, and the Americans, the first thing they're going to do is destroy all of the Air Force planes. So the Iraqi Air Force realized that their planes were all going to be destroyed by the Americans as soon as the war started.
Yeah.
And so all of the Iraqi Air Force planes took off and flew to the nearest place that they knew the Americans wouldn't go,
right.
Iran.
Yeah. Okay.
So 130 aircraft, fighter jets, passenger planes from Iraqi Airways, and Susanna basically defect to Iran.
It's like dropping a bag of pills at a music festival.
Yep.
You throw it in the nearest bush and hope it's still there yep. when you come back.
The Iranians were like, thanks, we'll take them, and absorbed all of it into the Iranian Air Force. Susanna has been flying Iranian dignitaries around ever since. Iraq has been asking Iran over and over, can we please have our fighter jets back? And Susanna, I don't know whether they're specifically asking about Susanna.
They've got to have a soft spot for Susanna.
Surely. Yeah. And Iran is kind of like, oh, yeah, we're happy to do that. We're just going to do a few bit of maintenance on them and then we'll send them back. And, you know, decades have gone by with Iran never giving them back. So that is the story, Pat, of how the only plane to have launched a missile that nearly sank an American naval ship was a business jet in disguise that, at least recently, was flying Iranian dignitaries from place to place.
That's a hell of a story. You know, all the conflict of the Middle East, all the switching of sides, all the various alliances and sanctions and then realliances, then re-sanctions. And this plane has, against the odds, lived through that entire process.
The thing I really would love to know is, has Susanna survived the current conflict?
And, you know, if you're that French ex-girlfriend that the plane was named after, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're listening at abc.net.au, we will accept emails from Susanna. Pat, thank you very much. I am glad that I was able to tell that story to you and you didn't know any of it beforehand.
My absolute pleasure. What a roller coaster.
Look, if you've got any information about Susanna you want to share with us, I'm keen to hear it. If you're listening at abc.net.au, even if you aren't Susanna, but you know something about her, let us know. Thanks very much. We will be back on Thursday, for real this time, with an episode that's about oil shocks and the oil shocks of the 70s, the oil shock that we may be going through right now, and what we can learn about the similarities between the two. I'll see you then.